90.5 FM. We're talking about an emerging health crisis and a discussion that you will hear first here on WBAI on Health Styles. We'll be back in just a moment. There's plenty more to talk about. Stay tuned. Welcome back. This is Barbara Gleickstein, and you're tuned into WBAI 99.5 FM in New York. You're listening to Health Styles, which is brought to you by the Nursing and Health Resource Network in cooperation with the New York City Registered Nurses Association. Today's guest, Deborah Schuller, founder and president of the National Particular Nurses Association. And joining us as well by telephone is David from Canada, who has been most generous and kind to be part of this conversation today, discussing a health situation, a health condition without a name, perhaps, without a direction, and with a tremendous amount of need for more research and attention to be given to it, which is why we are devoting today's program of Health Styles to look at this question of the etiology of a parasitic disease, if you will, that has been cornered for the most part into a psychiatric disorder. As a nurse, I am moved that people, particularly people who come in with an unsightly and difficult health problem, and particularly a skin disorder, I must tell you, there is something about a person coming close to you and coming into your room, I think we can all admit to this, who is covered with open lesions. We're concerned about what it is. Can I catch it? Is it infected? Who is this person? And as much of our empathy and compassion is needed, walls do go up.
I'd like to add to that that it's an interesting thing we tell people when they call. If you go to see the physician and they're not taking precautions, gloving up, gowning up, making sure that the next person that comes into the examining room isn't going to be exposed, then don't waste your time. They don't believe you. Don't waste your time. Don't waste their time. There's no question that this should requires strict precautions to be taken. And the fact that David is here from Canada doesn't take away the reality that we have reports from New York City, West Side, East Side, all over the state. We have reports from every state in America, and the data is on its own pretty compelling. So we want to be sure that people don't have the misconception that this isn't going to happen in their neck of the woods. They would be amazed where these reports come from.
Deborah, let's talk about springtails a little bit in Columbula. What do they look like? And we know that they're microscopic in size, so it's not something someone can see on their skin. But how do they, and how, in fact, do they impact, and how do they live?
Well, I'm not a springtail expert, nor had I ever heard of them before this, so I don't want to mislead anyone to think that I am, but I can tell you that initially, they could very easily be mistaken for lice. And in nature, you could see them on the back of leaves. In the wintertime, you can see them bouncing on the snow in great numbers. They're also called snow fleas. And they can be so minute that it requires a microscope, but they can be big enough to see. And once you develop the skill of identifying them, you can see them on the skin. You can see them clustered around the lesion, actually. But it does look like what you would expect to see around a lesion because they've probably been doing this for some time without being recognized. I think they've been inconspicuous since the beginning of time as far as people goes, if we're now finding them the way we're finding them in people's skin. The first report of anyone having this quote-unquote supposed delusional illness was from the 1800s in the literature. But you can go back to images from mental institutions, people who were locked up because they were accused of neurotic picking. And the Columbula feed on fungus primarily, but they are there as the decomposers. Interestingly enough, the morticians say that when it comes to who shows up first on a corpse, springtail are there first. That's very suspicious also. So it's not as though they don't have some sort of a distinguished tradition of being accounted for here and there. It's just that there never really was a collective effort to pull it all together. And I'm proud that the NPA, being the little guys that we are, we were able to do this and to get the ball rolling because we are very small. But small is not bad because small can be very focused, and that's why when someone coughs, we hear them, and we don't assume that they're mental, and we don't presume that we know more than they do. So people, if I would say anything to any of the physicians, listen to these people. They are incredible wealth of information. And don't assume that you know more about this than they do. They're lived, and please, please try to help. I mean, there's so much technology today. This is basic stuff.
One of the concerns that comes up in thinking about this and the ubiquity of them and the fact that they are parasites is there another role that they potentially can be playing in carrying other disease or other health issues, disease, or if they live on and are engaged in this sort of ecosystem with fungi and bacteria, and there's a question of balance and imbalance, what is the potentiality of them being involved in other public health epidemiology?
Well, they are a major player in the cycle of life, in the carbon cycle. Without them, we would not be here. They make it possible for the soil to be fertile enough for plants to grow and photosynthesis and air for us to breathe and all of that. But at the same time, if you look at it ecologically, environmentally, we've displaced many of the organisms by trying to kill everything. And by doing that, you have annihilated a lot of the predators for organisms like springtail or calambula, which means that if they're not defending themselves, they're just making more of themselves. So yes, the balance of nature gets tipped, and when it gets tipped at the most basic level of how we breathe and live and eat, then it trickles up and down and all over the place to where it's almost impossible to reel it back in. They are incredibly important in our lives on this planet.
David, you mentioned a couple of things I'd like to go back to if we can. Your research on your own and your desire to find answers also has led members of your family. You mentioned your daughter, who actually helped you connect with the NPA and with Deb Altshuler. What has this been like for you on a day-to-day basis in terms of family, community, your work? How has this impacted your life?
Well, I had a good job, but I had to leave it.
And what kind of work did you do, David?
I was in the telecommunications business.
Mm-hmm.
And, the lesions were bothering people around me, so they didn't ask me to leave, but they didn't ask me to stay when I said I thought I should leave. Mm. So I left. And I took a job working outside where I thought people wouldn't mind so much, working in construction. But it bothered people there. So then I just stayed off work for about 6 months and trying to spend more time trying to find out what this was. And now I'm starting to, I've gotten my lesions down to a quite minimal number because of the help of a naturopath and the help of the NPA.
Do you want to talk a little bit about how you've been working with the naturopath? And I know this is specific to you, and if anyone who is listening has reason to believe that they are suffering from the same problem, I would urge you to contact the NPA and register, and know that the sharing of this information, if David is willing to share this information, is something specific to his particular needs, and I would urge you to take that into consideration if you share that with us.
Well, I just happened to luck onto a good naturopath, because I guess there are some that are not so good and some that are good, just like any other profession. And she believed right away that I had a parasite. She'd never heard of calambula, at least not as a parasite. But she was willing to do the scrapings and take the pictures and send them to the NPA to be looked at, and then they sent them back showing the calambula circled on the picture. So then she began to treat. She said, "Well, you've got something." She's not an expert on calambula here, so but she said, "But you got something in there that's some kind of a parasite. So we've got to get rid of it." And she'd already decided ahead of time that the way to do it was not to try and kill it. The way to do it was to try and make it uncomfortable on my body by working on other things like pH balance and getting rid of any fungal infections might have or anything else like that using naturopathic medicine. And also a little bit with diet, about what not to eat and what to eat. And forcing me to drink 10 glasses of water a day.
Was that hard to do?
Well, it was hard, yeah, because at that point I was working driving cab.
Hmm.
It was kind of
not many places to stop to use a restroom, huh?
That's right, yeah, but, you know, I tried to keep up, and when I'm off work, I'll drink 12 or 15 glasses of water
wow.
per day. So it was just a general trying to get my body in balance in general so that the calendula would have no reason to be there.
Hmm.
And, you know, I thought it was all voodoo because, you know, I'm one of these people that trusted in traditional medicine completely before this happened. But it's working.
So your lesions are diminishing?
Most of my lesions are gone. I don't know if Deborah showed you the pictures that I sent.
She did. And we're on radio. If you want to describe it a little bit, visual description will tell a lot of will describe your situation.
Well, the one picture there was July of 2003. I had lesions all over my legs up to the middle of my thighs. They were up to a quarter inch deep and up to a half an inch round. And also had the not quite so big lesions on my arms and shoulders, which I didn't send you pictures of. So that, and then, so then it was around that time that I saw a Lyme doctor who's